thing in the world is to be alive. One is always in danger of one's life. But anyone who shrinks from that is a traitor to the great scheme and experiment of being.
One scholar called him one of the deepest thinkers who ever lived. One pope called him a gifted defender of the faith. One of his greatest opponents said the world is not thankful enough for him. He was recognized everywhere he went and loved by everyone who knew him. He was a master of the written word, a poet, a philosopher, a literary critic, a debater, a journalist, and a champion of social justice. What's he best remembered for? His detective stories. Hello, I'm Dale Alquist, and welcome to the Apostle of Common Sense, a series where we're going to explore the words and wisdom of the great English writer G.K. Chesterton. Let's start by getting something straight. G.K. Chesterton was the best writer of the 20th century. He said something about everything, and he said it better than anybody else. He was incredibly prolific and incredibly profound. His prose was poetic, and unlike most modern poetry, his poetry was also poetic. He was intuitive, incisive, and besides that, he was funny. To read him is to enjoy him. But hardly anyone reads him anymore. He is one of the most unjustly neglected writers of our time, and we neglect him at our peril. Chesterton is no longer taught in schools, but students should not consider themselves educated until they have read Chesterton. And furthermore, reading Chesterton is almost a complete education in itself. He covered all the bases, art and literature, history and philosophy, economics and social reform, religion and politics. Why is Chesterton neglected? Because the world finds it much more convenient to ignore him rather than to risk engaging him in an argument. Because to argue with Chesterton is to lose. Chesterton argued eloquently against materialism and scientific determinism, against relativism, agnosticism, atheism, and other diseased philosophies that have infected the halls of academia for more than a century. He also argued against both socialism and capitalism, and showed why they have both been the enemies of freedom and justice in modern society. And what did he argue for? What was it he defended? He defended the ordinary man. He defended the family. And most importantly, he defended the Catholic faith. Perhaps that is why he is neglected. The modern world prefers writers who excuse sin and scoff at Christianity, who deny the dignity of the poor, and who think freedom means no responsibility. In 1905, a famous London newspaper hired Chesterton to write a weekly column. He was told he could write about anything he wanted, except religion and politics. Chesterton responded by saying there was nothing else worth writing about.
Religious liberty is supposed to mean that everybody is free to discuss religion. In practice, it means that hardly anybody is allowed to mention it.
Chesterton went ahead and wrote the column for the next 30 years. And every week, he wrote about religion and politics. He never backed away from controversy. But if you think about it, every controversy, every argument, every discussion is really about religion or politics, or both. Religion has to do with our relationship with God. Politics has to do with our relationship with our neighbor. These are controversial for the simple reason that all the problems in the world come from our failure to obey the two great commandments, to love God and to love our neighbor.
The Bible tells us to love our neighbor and love our enemy, generally because they are the same person.
Chesterton was controversial, and still is, because he took the trouble to defend simple, basic truths, the first things, the permanent things. In spite of what the newspapers say, in spite of what the colleges teach, and in spite of what laws the politicians make, most people hold certain basic truths in common. Chesterton said that the common things are not commonplace. They are terrible and startling. Death, for instance, and first love. But the common things are the basis of common sense. Chesterton called common sense that extinct branch of psychology. In the modern world, common sense and the common man are under constant attack.
The modern world talks about how it has emancipated the common man. In fact, it has led to a new persecution of the common man. If it has emancipated anybody, it has, in that rather narrow way, emancipated the uncommon man. It has given an eccentric sort of liberty to some of the hobbies of the wealthy, and to some of the lunacies of those who call themselves cultured. The only thing that it is forbidden is common sense, as it would have been understood by the common people.
In this series, we're going to be exploring Chesterton's message for the modern world and see why he can be called the Apostle of Common Sense. But first, let's learn a little bit more about the man himself. Gilbert Keith Chesterton was born in England in 1874 and died in 1936. He never went to college. He went to art school. In 1900, he was asked to contribute a few magazine articles on art criticism, and he then went on to become one of the most prolific writers of all time. He published over 15 million words. He wrote 100 books, contributions to 200 more, hundreds of poems and short stories, including, of course, the popular series of mysteries featuring the priest detective, Father Brown. Though he wrote to nearly every literary genre, he considered himself primarily a journalist. He wrote over 4,000 essays for several London newspapers, and he edited his own paper, GK's Weekly, for the last 11 years of his life. He was a popular lecturer and debater in his time, taking on such contemporaries as George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, and Clarence Darrow. He traveled to several countries in Europe and twice to the United States on lecture tours. G.K. Chesterton was a giant in every way. A massive mind and a massive body, he stood at a towering 6 feet 4 inches and weighed 300 pounds. His weight was the subject of many jokes, most of which he told himself. For instance, he said he was one of the politest people in England. After all, he could stand up and offer his seat to 3 ladies on a bus. Certainly, he was recognized wherever he went. One young woman said to him, "Everybody seems to know you, Mr. Chesterton." To which he sighed, "If they don't, they ask." It's not too hard to understand why everyone recognized him. In order to keep him somewhat tidy, his wife dressed him in a huge cape and hat. That, along with his great weight, great height, and the tiny glasses on the end of his nose, full mustache, and cigar, and you have G.K. Chesterton. He also carried a sword stick. Yes, the sword in it was real, but he was never known to use it except to stab at the pillows in his study while he dictated an essay or a book chapter. He also carried a gun. He was never known to use that either, except, he claimed, when he heard someone say that life was not worth living. Then he'd take out the gun and offer to shoot the person.
The supreme adventure is being born. Existence is still a strange thing to me, and as a stranger, I give it welcome. We should always endeavor to wonder at the permanent thing, not at the mere exception. We should be startled by the sun, and not by the eclipse. We should wonder less at the earthquake, and wonder more at the earth. The test of all happiness is gratitude. Thanks are the highest form of thought. You say grace before meals. All right. But I say grace before the play and the opera, and grace before the concert and pantomime, and grace before I open a book, and grace before sketching, painting, swimming, fencing, boxing, walking, playing, dancing. and grace before I dip the pen in the ink.
Chesterton was a marvelously clear thinker, but he usually had no idea where or when his next appointment was. He did much of his writing in train stations, since he usually missed the train he was supposed to catch. He once hailed a cab to take him to an address that turned out to be across the street. And he once sent a telegram to his wife which read, "M at Market Harborough, where ought I to be?" His absent-mindedness may have been legendary, but his present-mindedness may have been even more so. He could actually write an essay in longhand while at the same time dictating a different essay to his secretary. This absent-minded, overgrown elf of a man who filled up a room when he entered it and who laughed at his own jokes and who would amuse children at birthday parties by catching buns in his mouth, this was the man who wrote a book which led a young atheist named C.S. Lewis to become a Christian. This was the man who wrote a novel that inspired Michael Collins to lead a movement for Irish independence. This was the man who wrote an essay in the Illustrated London News that first inspired Mohandas Gandhi to lead a movement to end British colonial rule in India. And this was the man who wrote a book that led to a wide revival of a writer who had been almost forgotten in England, Charles Dickens. When Chesterton burst upon the literary scene, he impressed readers and critics alike with his brilliant wit, his matchless style, and his artful use of paradox.
A citizen can hardly distinguish between a tax and a fine, except that the fine is generally much lighter. Men do not differ much about what things they will call evils, but they differ enormously about what evils they will call excusable. A new philosophy generally means in practice the praise of some old vice. It is not always wrong to go to the brink of the lowest promontory and look down on hell. It is when you look up at hell that a serious miscalculation has probably been made. Take away the supernatural, and what remains is the unnatural.
Critics were amused by his epigrams and his paradoxes, and though he seemed to be defending the Christian faith, they assumed he was doing it merely for effect. But when they found out he was defending it because he actually believed it, and not just for its shock value, they were, well, shocked. But in 1922, they were shocked even more when G.K. Chesterton joined the Roman Catholic Church. That a great man of letters should embrace the ancient faith of Rome was something of a scandal in the literary world and the intellectual establishment. They thought that Chesterton had suddenly become narrow, when in fact he became universal. What for them was a complete puzzle was for Chesterton himself the final piece of the puzzle, the completion of a complete thinker. We cannot emphasize this point enough, that Chesterton was a complete thinker. That is why he is such a challenge to the modern world. We have come to prefer incomplete thinking. We want things in fragments. That way we don't have to think about our inconsistencies. That way we don't mind when our jobs contradict our ideals or when our politics contradict our faith, because we keep each thing in its own watertight compartment. But Chesterton was utterly consistent. He was consistent because his faith touched everything. He wrote about everything, and everything he wrote was imbued with his faith.
You cannot evade the issue of God. Whether you are talking about pigs or the binomial theory, you are still talking about him. Now, if Christianity is nothing more than a fragment of metaphysical nonsense invented by a few people, well, then defending it, of course, means simply talking that metaphysical nonsense over and over again. But if Christianity should happen to be true, then defending it may mean talking about anything and everything. Things can be irrelevant to the proposition that Christianity is false, but nothing can be irrelevant to the proposition that Christianity is true.
The fact that Chesterton wrote for a wide secular audience and always defended a Christian perspective is, of course, remarkable and unheard of in today's media. But while it's one thing to say we should read Chesterton because he was important, it's even better to be able to say we can read Chesterton because he's still fresh and accessible. His newspaper articles are not just a historical curiosity. They are as pertinent today as when he wrote them three generations ago. And while some of his books have never gone out of print, many of them are back in print again because of a growing interest from those who have rediscovered this writer who's no longer taught in the schools. But before you read Chesterton, be warned. He does not write like any other writer. You have to throw most of your expectations out the window and read him on his own terms. He will make you think. He will thrill you. He may frustrate you. He may try your patience. There may be times when he seems to be floating airily, going nowhere or going everywhere at once, and then, like a hawk, he will suddenly swoop to a conclusion that will startle you. You'll understand at once that nothing he said was irrelevant. But the most surprising thing about him is that there's nothing peculiar or bizarre or exotic about his ideas. You will find that all he does is express your own thoughts better than you are able to express them. You'll find yourself saying, "But of course!" That's because he represents common sense. The only thing surprising about common sense is how uncommon it has become.
The act of defending any of the cardinal virtues has today all of the exhilaration of a vice. Right is right, even if nobody does it. Wrong is wrong, even if everybody is wrong about it.
Chesterton claimed that all he was doing was nothing more than uttering plain, simple truths. But they sounded so original and surprising and paradoxical because the world has come to expect something other than the truth. The world has things backwards. But he also said that sometimes truth has to come as a surprise, because that is the only way we will recognize it and appreciate it. More than one observer has described this 300-pound cigar-smoking journalist as a mystic. Well, Chesterton did say there was a connection between mysticism and common sense. Both appeal to realities that we all know to be real, even if we cannot prove them. He also said that mysticism is only a transcendent form of common sense, and that the ordinary man has always been a mystic. But some have also described Chesterton as a contemplative. Chesterton looked deeply into everything. He was always trying to find the universal. He certainly could not have defended the faith so well unless he understood it intimately. And fortunately for us, since he wrote so much, we have the privilege of looking at his thoughts. We also have the advantage of having his vision enhance our own. Perhaps only a true contemplative could have said that if you look at a thing 999 times, you're perfectly safe. But if you look at it for the 1,000th time, you're in frightful danger of seeing it for the first time. I'm Dale Alquist. Join us again on The Apostle of Common Sense, and you'll be in frightful danger of seeing things for the first time.